Hi, this is Michael McConaughey. I'm the voice of Vampire Hunter D and a lot of other things. I've been very fortunate in being able to be a whole lot of different people in my career. You are listening to the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast, and you better enjoy it.
Welcome to the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast, the podcast dedicated to any and all vampire movies not covered by other Movie by Minute podcasts. And we are pretty much now at the end of From Dusk Till Dawn, with just about, let's say about 10 minutes left of the movie, with a lot of credits as well. And I'm going to be covering minutes 95 to 100, which begin with Scott getting killed, getting grabbed by the vampires and about to be killed, and then Seth making the right decision and leaving Kate behind. But joining me for these minutes, please introduce yourself.
Chris, I'm Trisha Copeland. I'm an author and vampire lover.
What are you the author of?
I am author of the Kingdom Journal series, which is a witch vampire YA fantasy series, as well as the Realm Chronicles series, which is a fae fantasy series.
A bae or a fae, you said?
Fae, yes.
Fae, like the fairies, gotcha.
Like the fairies, yes.
What did you think of when, like, genres cross fairies and vampires over, like some southern vampire books that were just renamed nameless, because we're not talking about that author.
Oh, we're not talking about that author. That's fine.
I mean, she's fine. I don't want anything against her. We're just, you know, we're promoting you, not her. I'm just saying. That's the only other time I've heard that happen before. I don't think Anne Rice ever did that, so.
That was an interesting take. I didn't read the book series, like, all the way to the end. I did watch the TV series, which I was kind of disappointed at the end of.
Yep.
But, So, I think you can mix all those.
Kind of like I was disappointed at the end of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But we're going to fix that soon, aren't we?
I hope so.
We'll see. We'll see what the director of a terrible Marvel MCU movie can do with Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Well, everything's coming back, so yeah.
Definitely. So talk about your love of From Dusk Till Dawn, and where did you first hear about this movie? How did it inspire Kingdoms of Embers?
Well, you know, I actually hadn't heard of the movie until very recently. And the great thing about this movie is this is the only vampire movie that my husband has watched willingly with me.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, I know. Quentin Tarantino. Hello.
Right.
Yeah. So that was epic because we actually both enjoyed the same movie. But it was just part of it was comical, but then just so gross, right?
So you both had never seen the movie before. Had you heard of the movie and what the context of the film was?
I had not. No, I had to look it up. So back in 1996, I was in grad school and I never watched TV during that time. I think I had like a TV unblitz for 2 years of my life. So I was excited to find this film and I've watched it twice already. So since like Friday, in 2 days, I've watched it twice.
Were you shocked by the content? Was it off-putting to you? Let's face it, it is definitely a guy's film. Yes, we have a lot of female characters in the film, mostly vampires. But the only two female characters in the film that are of, like, major importance are Juliet Lewis and Selma Hayek. And Selma Hayek is only in this film for approximately less than 10 minutes.
Right. Well, I knew what to expect. I mean, I saw Pulp Fiction before, and I'm right coming off the heels of watching the Anora movie that's nominated for an Oscar. So, and it was Quentin Tarantino. So I came in expecting, and as soon as you see the bar and the twirling titties bar, you know what this is going to be, right?
The titty twister. The titty twister and the logo, the sign, and of course, there was a TV show as well, and it was on El Rey Network, which is Robert Rodriguez's TV channel, which I think has now been absorbed into Paramount Plus.
Right, yeah. So I think when you look online, there's like four different versions of From Dusk Till Dawn with multiple seasons on the series.
Yep, there's
So.
3 seasons of a TV show, and this movie had 2 sequels. The second movie, they kind of go into a lot of explanation about like what you saw at the very end of the film, like the back end of the club is a giant temple. We'll get there in the next 5 minutes. But also in the third movie, it's the prequel. How Pandemona and Desdemona became a vampire.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, and of course, definitely the TV show played up a lot of the Lair the White Worm, vampire snake kind of people a lot because let's face it, she kind of morphs out into like a snake vampire, even though in a previous scene we had Tom Savini turn into a giant rat and we had a bunch of like really fugly looking vampires through the rest of this movie. Even Quentin Tarantino comments in the commentary that these don't look like vampires anymore. They just look like horrible, hideous monsters.
That's what I was confused by. This is definitely a new take on vampires for me. And one, I was looked so much like a wolf that I was like, is this a werewolf or is this a vampire? So I was, and I think it's in this 10 minutes that that wolf character shows up.
Don't you question that as well when you watch like Bram Stoker's Dracula when he's in his giant wolf form and he's like fucking Lucy in that scene in the garden?
Well, that's true. Right. So, yeah, and that was very confusing as well. But
Definitely. But we seem to be into ugly, fugly-looking vampires these days. Cause look at Bill Skarsgård in Nosferatu. I mean, that is gross.
yes, I just saw that movie too. So, yeah.
That is not an attractive vampire. That is not Angel. That is not Spike. That is not Bill or Eric.
No, this is not Damon
No,
Salvatore.
Damon Salvatore. Yes, I know a lot of people, men and women, who find him very attractive as well. And I have to admit, he's got those good looking. He's got the eyebrows that really do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he uses them too. But yeah, I thought during this 10 minutes that
Five minutes.
both
Hold on. Stop. So we're only
5 minutes,
covering 5 minutes out of the first 5 minutes,
sorry,
and then
five
we'll
minutes.
record the next episode.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, during this 5 minutes, it really shows how strong of a character Scott becomes, and as well as his sister Kate. So yeah, I thought that was very poignant that both of them Scott kills his father and then Kate kills Scott. And they really like come into their own power a little bit there.
Well, Scott gets killed off pretty fast right at the beginning of this, and Kate is the one to do it because he is just being ripped apart and fed on, and that's the last we see of Ernie in Hollywood because he's got like a couple appearances here and there, and then he goes on to a lustrous career later on doing other things that's not involving Hollywood. And he's doing pretty well for himself. Whereas like we the last survivors are Juliette Lewis and George Clooney, George Clooney, I just saw in a movie called Wolfs with Brad Pitt. They're both kind of like hitmen that are against each other. And it's kind of a funny, dark comedy, kind of the way you would expect George Clooney and Brad Pitt to be in a movie together. Of course, they were in Ocean's 11. And Juliette Lewis has got the third season of Yellow Jackets coming up.
That's right. And yeah, I was really surprised to see George Clooney in this movie. And I was kind of trying to figure out where he was in his career,
ER.
too,
And
right?
Batman.
Oh, ER. Yes.
And Batman and Robin would come out a year after this film.
Wow.
Yeah, a terrible Batman movie, let's just face it. There's no getting around it. It's awful. But I was excited that he was going to play Batman because I had watched ER. I was like, oh, wow. And I remember getting the VHS box or whatever on the back. It said, George Clooney, Batman and Robin. And I'm like, ooh, it's coming. So I was pretty excited for that because this came out. Early 1996 in theaters, and then came out on VHS in early 1997. So, because VHS didn't, turn around on streaming like Nosferatu was on streaming like a month after it was in theaters.
Right, yeah. I didn't see the George Clooney Batman. I remember the Val Kilmer, and I remember Robert Pattinson. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
was the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze and Uma Thurman as speaking of, Uma Thurman and Pulp Fiction, Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy.
Right.
We have our two heroes back to back with each other, and they're like, pretty much out of ammo, but that disco ball is the only thing kind of saving them.
Definitely. That was and at first I couldn't figure out why there were so many beams of light everywhere, and then it, yeah, then it hit me. Literally and figuratively.
How do you like your vampires killed? Do you like it a bloody mess like in True Blood? Do you like them to bamp into dust like in Buffy? Or do you like it like exploding in entrails in this film?
I can have my vampires die any way. I mean, I think they're all good ways. I mean, I think the most, probably my favorite is when they burn up after the stake goes into them. And I think they did, it seems like they died in so many different ways in this movie. Like they would go into goo and then sometimes they burned up. So I was a little confused about that.
How do the vampires die in your book?
In my book, the vampires are immortal, but they are more susceptible. So they can die by like a bullet. They're just superhuman, basically, and they live like usually 800 to 1,000 years, so they can die naturally after 800 to 1,000 years. But they're not as immortal, quote unquote, as the normal vampire.
Excellent, excellent. And within these 5 minutes, we also get the third helping of I think it's Cheech Marin.
Is that the Frost character?
Well, he's the boss. He's George Clooney's boss in this movie. He's the he was the border guard
in the beginning, when he's
like comes on board because he suspects that Jacob's lying, and then he kind of eyeballs Juliet Lewis while she's on the toilet. Gross. The second time we see him, he's the caller outside the club where he's just like you know calling out for the what do you call it? His character's name is Chet Pussy. He's the pussy caller.
Oh, right, yes.
The one that's just like, we got Kyle Pussy, this Pussy, that Pussy. And then right. He's Carlos, the boss, who they stole the money for. So he's got three different paychecks coming from him for this movie. Very versatile actor. And let's face it, you kind of get different looks for him throughout the films because, again, he's in that uniform. He's very clean cut. And then as Chet, he's just like this disgusting, you know, with the fake hair and beard or whatever. And then Carlos has got that hat on. So they really do it up to make sure it looks like three different, completely different characters.
They did a good job of that because I did not catch that or research that. So, admittedly,
I heard the place was kind of rough. What were they? Psychos? No, they weren't fucking psychos. They were vampires. Psychos don't explode when exposed to sunlight. That is one of my favorite lines of the movie, besides George Clooney what he says to Kate when she has like, do you want some company on the road? And he's like, Kate, I may be an asshole, but I'm not a fucking asshole.
Yeah, that was a very good line.
That's a very gentlemanly line because he promised Jacob he would keep her, keep them safe, and he failed out of two out of three of them. So.
Right, yeah, letting her go is a safer route.
It is a safer route, but in the TV show, he says that line, but then he turns around and says, Kate, she's like, what do I got left? You know, my father's dead, my mother's dead, my brother's dead. I got nothing. I got that RV. That's it. And then she goes with him, actually. In the TV show, they kind of like, they don't romantically get involved. They are just, road buddies.
Right, yeah, that would be wrong if they were romantically involved.
Correct. Juliet Lewis at this point, by the way, is 22 playing 17, so, but yeah, it is wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, so our 5 minutes end with George leaving Kate behind.
That's right.
And that's kind of like almost the end of the movie, but we got one more scene that definitely is telling of like, was there more to this film than what we see? But we'll get there in the next 5 minutes. Overall, what do you think of this whole movie? Would you rewatch this? Were you aghast? Does super duper violence and adult material offend you in any way?
This movie did not offend me. No. And I've watched True Blood and I wasn't offended by...
Yes. I forgot. Yeah, True Blood is...
Whew. Right. So when I first started watching True Blood, but I think a series like that usually shock you the first... What do you call it? The pilot always shocks you, I feel like. So I felt like shows like that shock you in the beginning. And then once you keep watching, it's not like that through the whole thing. So I've watched a bunch of those. So I don't really, that doesn't really bother me.
What's the rating on your books?
They are PG-13. They're young adult books.
Okay. Do you ever, worry about what's the material you're writing. Is it getting too close to a mature rating when you have characters that are being romantic in any way, or do you know how to draw the line without it being too overt?
Yeah, it's not hard for me to draw the line, and the romance plots are so minimal plots in the books that it doesn't become a big part of the story. I mean, the characters are together, but they're 17, 18 years old, and especially the fairies, they live in Middle Earth, and their technology and their society is much more medieval, like Middle Ages. So, and they still have those, you have to have somebody to watch you on your date, right? So it's pretty easy not to go too far in the romance portion of those stories for me.
When you say Middle Earth, by the way, is Middle Earth allowed to be used by everybody and anybody? Because I thought that was a Tolkien place.
Well, I mean, the terms Middle Earth, they're not copyrighted or trademarked or anything like that. I think anybody can create their own Middle Earth. And literally, my Middle Earth is, these fantasies are set in contemporary time when the humans have cell phones.
Okay.
But under our bedrock, and through our bedrock, the fairies have their rings and these tunnels that are magically charged that they can get through our bedrock into their quote-unquote Middle Earth. And they get all their sunlight and water through these rings as well. So they have their own world, which mirrors our world, basically, under our bedrock. And that's where my fairies live. So that was my kind of take on Middle Earth, because it's between Lower Earth, which is quote-unquote hell or Sheol, and the human realm, which is Upper Earth, quote-unquote, and then heaven is above the Upper Earth.
Interesting. Okay. I always wondered, I always thought Middle Earth was just, you know, something Tolkien invented and no one was allowed to use, but that's rather interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think he, I don't know if he invented it, I don't know if he was the first person, but that's what a lot of people think of when they think of Middle Earth, because so many people have read that, so.
Gotcha. Where can people find your books?
They can find them on Amazon and Kindle KU. They're also on audiobooks on Audible, as well as the Kingdom Journals are wide at Barnes & Noble as well.
And you can find me with my own vampire book, Vlada, A Dracula Tale. We gender swap the cast of Dracula in several comic books and stories and the main graphic novel I did with Ken Hunt. Or you can find me over on my other horror show, Radio Horror, where we cover anything to do with horror, science fiction, and fantasy every Sunday night from 10 to midnight. And we'll be back with another 5 minutes of the Vampire Movie Minute podcast here on the Radio Horror Network.